The Housing Finance and Policy Committee will come to order, and I will note this meeting is taking place under House Rule 10.01. Ms. Hirsch, please take the roll.
Chair Houseman?
Present.
Houseman, present. Vice Chair Howard?
Present.
Howard, present. Representative Tice?
Tice, present.
Tice, present. Representative Agbaje?
Present.
Agbaje, present. Representative Bliss?
Present.
Bliss, present. Representative Gomez?
Gomez, present.
Gomez, present. Representative Hassan?
Hassan, present.
Hassan, present. Representative Heinrich? Representative Herr? Representative Juergens?
Juergens here.
Juergens, present. Representative Olson? Representative Farr?
Farr, present.
Farr, present. Representative Ryer?
Ryer, present.
Ryer, present. And Madam Chair, Madam Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Hirsch. The next item of business is approval of the minutes from Thursday, March 3. Representative Howard, have you had a chance to review those minutes?
Yes, Madam Chair. I will move the minutes.
Members, any corrections? If not, if you unmute yourselves, all those in favor of adoption of the minutes say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Members, the first bill on the agenda is House File 3549, and as the author of the bill, I will hand over the virtual gavel to Vice Chair Howard for the hearing of this bill.
Thank you, Chair Houseman. I move that House File 3549 be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Houseman, proceed with your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Minnesota Housing's policy and technical bill. As the agency administers programs and works with partners, there are issues that arise from time to time. With historic levels of need and funding being deployed, it is important they continue to make changes to improve access, to provide clarity to existing programs, and to expand program eligibility where they can. Dan Kitzberger from Minnesota Housing is here to present the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Madam Chair for carrying our bill. And for the record, I'm Dan Kitzberger. I'm the legislative director at Minnesota Housing. And if it works, I'll just kind of go section through section through the bill and explain the changes that we're proposing. So starting with Article 1, Section 1, there are, just to orient you, there are three sections in the bill. And we'll just go through them in order. The first article of the bill, three articles. Section one is a modification to the agency's debt ceiling. So Minnesota Housing is currently limited to $5 billion in outstanding notes and debts, and this includes all types. The last time this limit was raised was in 2008, and notably that's prior to the creation of housing infrastructure bonds and the increased uses and demand we've seen on this particular type of debt. The vast majority of this debt is the mortgage finance bonds that we use for our single family mortgage financing activity. And we need to do this in order to continue to ramp up our activity. So as I mentioned, we're currently limited to $5 billion in outstanding notes and bonds. This is about the agency's debt and not the state of Minnesota's. And just as a reminder, we're a discrete component unit of the state, and we receive separate credit ratings as such, separate from the state's credit ratings. This language would modify the calculation to the types of notes and bonds where the agency has a general, I should specify where the agency has a general obligation pledge. And this language, the language change would exclude limited obligation notes and bonds. So housing infrastructure bonds are the greatest amount that we have of limited obligation notes and bonds. And we are already limited in state law whenever you, the legislature, provides us with a new authorization. And nearly 90% of those notes, as I mentioned, are revenue bonds, which are secured by mortgage-backed securities and associated with our single-family mortgage financing. Mr. Chair and members, is it helpful to just, you know, pause after each section for questions, or just continue to move along until we see hands raised? Happy to take your guidance on that.
I would defer to Representative Hausman. Do you have a preference?
Mr. Chair, I would think that just present the entire bill and then we'll take up questions.
Okay.
Sounds good.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Sections 2 through 6 of Article 1, this would create authority for Minnesota Housing to work with Minnesota Management and Budget to explore a process called refunding of bonds. So I think there are a couple things I'll say about this that kind of help think about the process, because it is rather complex. So it's helpful to think of it as actually as refinancing of bonds. It's actually just called refunding of bonds as part of federal tax law. And in order to do this, you know, the conditions need to be right. So it's the timing of the bonds in terms of when they're you set what's called a call date. So they have to reach a certain point of maturity in order for this to work. The interest rate environment has to be right. So we have to see interest rates that are lower than the timing of which we actually issued the bonds in the original authorization. And so what we would do is we'd actually issue new bonds to pay back previous bond authorizations to be able to take advantage of lower interest rates. And I just want to clarify that this wouldn't be done in order to be able to borrow more. It would only be to reduce the debt service and produce a savings over the life of these bond authorizations. And so, you know, one of the questions that we sort of grappled with along with MMB and some of you may be wondering about is, well, you know, should this come with a fiscal note, or should we be considering a savings? And really the conclusion we arrived at is that this wouldn't happen with any sort of, you know, predictability or regularity. It's entirely dependent upon the market conditions as to whether or not we could take advantage of it. And this wouldn't require us to actually do it. It would allow us to be in consultation with MMB to consider doing this when the conditions present themselves. And so that's Article 2, or I'm sorry, Section 2 of Article 1 and 3. Section 2 just describes the process for doing this. And then Section 3 is the one outstanding authorization of nonprofit housing bonds, which would insert the language and allow us to refund those bonds if we decided to proceed as such. Nonprofit housing bonds were the precursor to housing infrastructure bonds, and the legislature made one authorization of those bonds. And then the same refunding bonds language that you'll find in Section 2 is also inserted into Section 4. And then from there, Sections 5 and 6 are all of the current authorizations of housing infrastructure bonds that the language is inserted into, that we could then go back if chosen or if decided to refund those bonds. With that, we'll move on to Article 2. This is eligibility and uses. So a couple of changes in this section. Section 1 allows for the preservation or creation of a of a detached accessory dwelling unit. So the fix-up in our fix-up fund. So the fix-up fund is a home improvement lending program that we operate for eligible households based on income eligibility. And this is where we work with a network of local lenders in their communities to provide home improvement financing. And so what we're proposing to do, and this is really based on some increased interest and activity around accessory dwelling units. So for people who would like to be able to live multi-generationally and add space on their properties is kind of one of the more common uses we see. So we'd like to be able to add this as an eligible use under the fix-up fund. Section two, this would create a new subdivision in our agency's enabling statute. So right now, we list eligibility for tribal nations within each one of our programs. And this is, we've just found, led to some, you know, questions and lack of clarity where we think there could be more clarity if we were to just put eligibility for federally recognized tribes and their tribal designated entities for all of our programs within our enabling statute. And then section three of Article 2 would require the agency create a new subdivision and require us to prioritize funds for serving households most impacted by housing disparities. And so what we intend there is, you know, we know that there are certain groups of Minnesotans who are more impacted by things like disparities in home ownership, cost burden renter households, and homelessness. We know that those things are more likely to affect certain groups than others. And so it would require the agency to take that into consideration when we're deploying resources in the community. Section four, which is middle page seven of the bill, this is under the Family Homeless Prevention and Assistance Program. And this would end the requirement for county board resolutions of support. This has really, we found, become an administrative hurdle, particularly for jurisdictions in greater Minnesota that administer family homeless prevention funds. So the state is broken up into regions. So there's complete statewide coverage. All 87 counties have eligibility for FHPAP funds. And in some cases, there are up to seven counties in these jurisdictions. And so it's just created an additional administrative hurdle in order to get as part of the application process and get it submitted to get all of these seven counties to be able to come forward and get it onto their agendas and get the resolution passed. FHPAP does enjoy broad statewide support. A lot of times you'll find organizations that are administering FHPAP funds working closely with counties and emergency assistance to sort of move applications along based on a particular household's needs and eligibility. And so it's become a really beneficial relationship in that regard. Section five, this would do a couple of things to our housing infrastructure bond statute in the definitions. So this would strike language regarding eligibility for single family home construction. This language has become somewhat confusing, and we already have authority to do this in other areas of our, in another area of our statute. So we're proposing to strike that language. And then it would also, on lines, 8.11 to really down to 8.25, this clarifies the definition of both senior and senior households for purposes of eligibility for senior housing development under housing infrastructure bonds. We've run into a little bit of confusion with applicants and have really ramped up activity in the past couple of RFP cycles around this use, and so want to make sure as we get new applicants coming in for this purpose that the language is really well understood. If we move on to section 6 of Article 2, this would allow us under housing infrastructure bonds, if we're looking at line point 917, this is one of the original uses of housing infrastructure bonds when it was initially created to finance costs of acquisition and rehab of federally assisted rental housing. We're proposing to add replacement of federally assisted rental housing to that use. And the reason for this is we've seen a few proposals in Greater Minnesota in particular for housing and redevelopment authorities who have developments where there are units that are in such disrepair that it's actually more cost effective to replace them, to tear them down and to replace them completely. But there are other units that just need rehab. And so for purposes of being able to use housing infrastructure bonds for those kinds of projects, as well as pair with other resources, as I'll talk about in a little bit here, we thought it made sense to allow for replacement of units in those situations. And then under section 6, if you look at lines 10.8 to 10.11, this would strike the requirement for a service plan to be put together by an HRA, an EDA, or a public housing entity or a community development agency. A service plan is what goes along with the individuals who will reside in supportive housing. And it's really the responsibility of the entity providing the service dollars to come up with the service plan. So these are entities that are more seen as being on the developer side of things. And it's just become difficult to operationalize and make sense to just limit the service plan requirement to those who are responsible for it. Moving on to section 7 of Article 2, this is our affordable workforce and home ownership program. That's 462A.38. And what we're proposing to do here is to make counties eligible applicants for that program. They currently aren't eligible. And we've started to see situations where, you know, counties, for example, will establish a land trust and want to be able to apply for the program. And so we've seen more of this activity, you know, in Greater Minnesota and, you know, even into sort of the exurb region of the metro area, where counties want to be more involved in housing, particularly in home ownership related activities. So we'd like to have them be eligible for that program. Section 8 is the workforce development or the workforce housing development program. So that's the program that's exclusively for outside of the 7-county metro. And the way the language is currently written, we've actually run into some confusion about where applications can come from geographically. So we're just clarifying in statute that it has to be applications from outside of the 7-county metro area. In addition to that, want to amend under the Workforce Housing Development Program the definition of eligible project area. And again, this is section 8 of Article 2. And this would include tribes and cities on tribal reservations as eligible applicants since they aren't currently eligible. Currently, it's only cities and other local units of government, such as economic development authorities, that are eligible to apply. So just want to clarify that both tribes and cities on tribal reservations are eligible applicants for that program. And then if we move on to section 9 of Article 2, we're still in the Workforce Housing Development Program here, so that's 462A.39, and we're on 11.16 to 11.22. That would allow for matching funds to come from a tribe or a tribal community since they aren't currently an eligible matching entity under the Workforce Housing Development Program. And then Section 10, which is the last section of Article 2, this relates to the change I talked about earlier in housing infrastructure bonds to allow for replacement. So this is the PARIF program that allows for preservation of federally assisted rental housing. This is an appropriated program, and we're proposing to allow for replacement of federally assisted housing under this program as well. This is typically in the form of a deferred loan that these funds go out, and would make it able to be paired with housing infrastructure bonds when appropriate. And so want to be able to address those applications that come in where it makes sense to rehab some units of a development and it makes sense to completely replace some others. And then lastly is Article 3. These are technical corrections. And this goes through a couple of different sections of our statute. And wherever the word insure appears, I-N-S-U-R-E, it replaces it with the word ensure, E-N-S-U-R-E. And the revisor's office was kind enough to go through and find the situations where that occurred and replace them. So that, Mr. Chair and members, is the bill, and I'm happy to try to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Kitzberger. Are there any questions for members? Going once. Okay. Representative Gomez. We're picking up a weird noise, Representative Gomez, if that's yours. Oh, we're still picking up a noise. Maybe I'll give Representative Hausman a second to chat about the bill, or if there's not any other members, and give Representative Gomez a chance to see if she can figure that out. Oh, Representative Gomez?
How are we sounding now?
There we go.
All right. Okay. Sorry about that, you guys. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a question for Mr. Kitzberger. I'm wondering about the part in Section 5, Subdivision 3, where you strike finance the construction or rehab of single-family homes. Mm. Can you tell me where that, when that language was added, and you know where that comes from, please?
Mr. Kitzberger.
Mr. Chair and Representative Gomez, that language was added, I believe, in 2019. It's fairly recent, I should say. And it's intended to go along with the new eligible use that was added about that time for new single-family home construction as an eligible use under housing infrastructure bonds. And I guess we've never fully understood the intent behind it, although we are confident that it, because of the language that's included in housing infrastructure bonds for single family home development eligibility, that it isn't necessary.
Representative Gomez.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Yeah, I do. So, yeah, I thank you for clarifying that, because that was what I thought. I thought this was the language that Representative Neuer added in, I think it might have been in 2020, in Ways and Means, before perhaps that bonding bill passed. Maybe it was 2019. Regardless, you know, I'm just curious about it, because as I recall, there was a lot of discussion and some consternation about adding this language, not for any technical reason, which is why I'm curious to see it struck in a technical, what I thought was sort of a technical bill, but for the substance of what the kind of policy suggestion was, which was an expansion of the use of housing infrastructure bonds for single family home production. And so, like, I'm curious if you weren't clear about the intent of adding the language, I'm curious if you ever talked to Chair Neuer about it. If there is existing authority to do that activity with housing infrastructure bonds, then I'm curious about, like, what all the consternation was about, why the language was suggested. And I'm just like, you know, this was added a couple of years ago by somebody who's a sitting member. So I'm just hopeful that you, if there was any confusion about what the intent of that language was, I hope that you had a conversation with him. And I certainly hope that you discussed it with him before striking that language that he obviously very intentionally added as an amendment in Ways and Means, as I recall.
Mr. Kitzberger.
Mr. Chair and Representative Gomez, the deletion of that language doesn't impact our ability to finance single family home ownership with housing infrastructure bonds. This is a concern. I think it actually got in, if you're helping me refresh my memory, I think it was discussed as far back as 2019 and actually got into the bill in 2020 and prior to the passage of that new use. And this just deletes a specific type of debt that gets issued that we have authorization in another area of statute to issue for this purpose. And so it's actually a concern raised by our bond counsel at the time, if I remember correctly, that the language was, as written, somewhat confusing and actually even unnecessary. And so we thought it made sense to strike that since we are still able to do this within housing infrastructure bond proceeds.
Anything further, Representative Gomez?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry if I could. Thank you. So those are two different things. I guess I heard you say when I asked you about striking it initially, like, that there was confusion about why it was included. And so I'm curious if you spoke with Chair Neuer about that confusion to clarify what the legislature's intent was in including that language.
Mr. Kitzberger.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gomez, we did not speak with Representative Neuer ahead of this. This is actually a provision we carried last year as well. I don't believe I've had a conversation with him about this language specifically. I have had conversations with him about the use of housing infrastructure bond proceeds for single family development financing. And this is something that we can do and will continue to do with housing infrastructure bond proceeds.
Representative Gomez.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Kitzberger. I wasn't in Ways and Means, not on bonding at that time, and actually wasn't on this committee during our first term. So, you know, I might not be tracking exactly what the conversation was at the time about this this use of housing infrastructure bonds. But my understanding of it was, I mean, even if you have the authority to do so, to use housing infrastructure bonds for this purpose, I guess my understanding was that, you know, Representative Neuer's intent in adding the language was to clarify that you had that authority and to push you in the direction of perhaps using the authority that you have apparently had all along. And so I guess I just want to express my concern that you haven't spoken to the author, because he's up the hall, the author of this provision. I think that if I'd added a couple of lines of, you know, very intentionally in Ways and Means as an amendment, that I'd want one of my colleagues to say, hey, maybe you should go go talk to them. So that's what I'm saying is you know, if there was lack of clarity about the intent, it's very easy to establish that by speaking to the author. I guess I'm just not really comfortable with striking that when those conversations haven't taken place, but I'll stop it there. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Representative Gomez. Anything
recording in progress. Recording stopped.
Mr. Chair and members, I appreciate that. I would just reiterate that language doesn't impact our ability to issue housing infrastructure bonds for purposes of single family housing development. And we have been doing that. We will continue to do that. That language simply eliminates a type of debt that we already have authorization in statute to issue in another area of statute.
Are there any other questions from members? Then I will turn it back to Representative Hausman for any final comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this bill is laid over, so if there does need to be more clarification about that, we do still have some time.
With that, the bill is laid over, and I'll turn the virtual gavel back to Chair Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, we're changing the order of bills. Representative Badger, we're taking up 3143 first and then 3287, and I'm told you've been informed about that, and you're prepared to go in that order.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay. So the next bill on the agenda is House File 3143. Representative Igbeje, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I move that House File 3143 be re-referred to the General Register.
Please proceed with your presentation.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Madam Chair and members of the committee. House File 3143 is a bill that would expand the eligibility list of housing infrastructure bonds in the state. An additional eligibility that is needed in our state is the construction of affordable housing for low-income community members. This bill would allow the development and preservation of housing at 50% area median income or less without the need for supportive services, which is what we currently have in the list of eligibility for housing infrastructure bonds. So as we've discussed in this committee and throughout Minnesota, there is not enough housing available for working families. For example, a family of four that is making less $52,000 or less in a year in the metro area or in the rural areas, an average of $39,942 or less, finds it difficult to acquire stable housing. And the data shows that in order for Minnesota to meet the demand for affordable housing, we need to be building up to 4,500 units of housing every year. But we're only building about a tenth of that at just 450 affordable units each year. And we need housing for these working families too. Without the ability to use housing infrastructure bonds to build for this income level, we will continue to see families overburdened by the cost of rent. This increases the risk of housing instability, especially at a time when we know that the ability to work and earn an income is even more precarious because of the pandemic. Families at this income level have been hard hit by closures, which are meant to prevent the spread of COVID, or they themselves have gotten sick and may continue to suffer long-term effects of COVID or even other illnesses. The rent being too high affects everyone, but even here we continue to see disparities with 58% of Minnesotans of color are cost burdened with rent compared to just only 44% of white Minnesotans. So this policy change in the eligibility standard of housing infrastructure bonds, coupled later with appropriate investment, will allow greater flexibility in creating housing for more of our state's lowest income households. So I have two testifiers with me today who can speak more about the urgent need for this bill.
We are joined by Mandy Pant, Project Manager for Project for Pride in Living. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Chair Hausman, members of the committee. My name is Mandy Pant. I'm a project manager with Project for Pride in Living, or PPL, and I also serve as PPL's policy committee chair. And as part of that role, I regularly attend the Homes for All policy meetings. And I'm pretty involved in the policy world at the legislature. PPL is a nonprofit organization that builds hope, assets, and self-reliance through affordable housing and workforce training in Twin Cities. We own and manage close to 1,600 units of affordable housing in the core cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, as well as several western suburbs. Close to 3,500 folks live with PPL every night. And alongside our housing work, we also provide career readiness training, matching several thousand promising workers with living wage jobs every year. I have worked in housing development at PPL for over 8 years, managing affordable housing projects from concept to funding applications, design, financial closing, and construction management. While working in both single-family and multifamily arenas, I've realized how impactful state and local housing policies can be. This is why PPL and I have become more involved in policy development recently and in advocacy for funding and policy change. Decisions made by the legislature directly influence what kind of housing gets built and how much of it gets built. Therefore, a two-way communication is essential in designing the policies that are needed to serve the most vulnerable in our state. House File 3143 would add another new eligible use to expand the housing infrastructure bonds to support deeply affordable units for those Minnesota households that don't necessarily need supportive services. 50% AMI or area median income, and even more so 30% AMI units are our state's greatest housing need. And by expanding this use, we allow for greater flexibility. Minnesota is projected to have over 52,000 unit gap in the next 10 years to serve the 80% AMI or lower income households. And with HIB funds, none of the units being built currently are for households that don't need supportive services. During my time as a project manager, I've seen countless examples of people applying for housing and not being eligible simply because they don't need supportive housing. Don't check a box for disability or a box for homelessness. For instance, one of my projects in St. Paul targeted homeless Native American youth and had to turn away a number of young people because they didn't meet the definition of chronic homelessness. It's difficult to be chronic homeless at age of 18 or 19, but by turning them away, they are put at a much higher risk for homelessness in the future. I can't stress enough how much this policy change is needed. Coupled with a significant bonding investment from the legislature, we can progress towards meeting Minnesota's affordable housing needs and have the ability to provide affordable housing to individuals and families without having to go through a traumatic period of housing instability and even homelessness. In recent years, we've added a number of new uses to HIBs, yet our most flexible financial resource is unable to serve our state's greatest housing need. Before I close, I'd like to thank Representative Agbaje for carrying this bill and to PPL resident Todd Casey, who will be following me, for sharing his story and amplifying the need for why affordable housing is so important. My hope is that this policy change will finally happen this year. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today, and I'm happy to answer any questions you have now or in the future.
And next, we are joined by Todd Casey, a PPL resident. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record. You are on mute.
We're good now?
Good.
Okay, sorry about that. Hi, my name is Todd Casey, and I'm a happy PPL resident. So I'm here today. Would you like for me to continue or is...
Please.
Or just introduce myself. Okay, thank you. So I've been a resident with the PPL now going on 2.5+ years, closer to 3. They allowed me to take up housing. And the reason why I'm here today is a big part is because I'm so passionate about it and it's so important is to have a housing, because without housing from PPL, I wouldn't be where I'm at today. They allowed me, as I mentioned, housing. And since then, I've been able to put my life completely together. I was released from prison and I needed a reentry address. They worked with me. They got me into housing. They've been more than helpful in all areas. It has made a huge part of my life. In fact, I was able to get my brother, Eric, who now is with me. While living in PPL property, I also have become a business owner that has now allowed me to employ several people, including my brother, as I mentioned, and my son, Justin David Casey, who has my grandson, Emery. So PPL, providing me with housing, has made more than a huge difference in my life. It's made all the difference in my life. And without housing for us coming, these programs and having these property management companies like PPL, without them, we wouldn't be able, I wouldn't be where I'm at today. And it has not only made a difference in my life, but also has made me a law-abiding citizen. It's given me my health back. I was having mental health issues. Housing allows you to take care of those things. I can't even begin to stress just how important housing is and just how important being with PPL. And them giving me that one opportunity. And from that, I've grown. And as I mentioned, have also helped in areas. Last but not least, I like to talk about the outreach program that they have there at PPL too. PPL helps you, Project for Pride Living helps you with a number of things. So it just starts with housing, but they also help you with jobs. They help you with your schooling, anything that you may need, they have that there as well. So not only do they help us with housing, they also help us get our lives back on track. And I am so grateful and so thankful for Project for Pride Living. And I would scream from the mountaintop if they would let me how important it is to have funding for this organization and organizations like theirs. And as I mentioned, I wouldn't be where I'm at here today. Now I'm a business owner, owning my own business and doing well. So I'm also available to answer any questions if you might have or anything else at that time.
Thank you, Mr. Casey. And we're joined now by Kristen Rosenberger, the Director of Advocacy and External Engagement from the Greater Twin Cities United Way. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Yes, thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Kristen Rosenberger, and as you mentioned, I'm the Director of Advocacy and External Engagement at Greater Twin Cities United Way, and it's just a pleasure to be here today and testify in support of House File 3143. As many as you probably know, Greater Twin Cities United Way, our mission is to build pathways toward prosperity and equity for all. We touch on over 500,000 lives across the 9-county metro area. We also fund over 95 service organizations and coalitions that do amazing work every day to support our communities, just like Mandy and Todd and our friends at Project for Pride and Living that just testified before me, one of our very highly valued nonprofit partners. But through our work, we know that a stable home is always a foundation that enables Minnesotans to thrive. However, if we look at the data in 2020, our 211 resource helpline received a record number of 70,000 calls that were related specifically to housing needs. And these numbers ballooned to more than 260,000 in 2021. So we absolutely know that the need is there and we know that the need is great. And so we're seeing too many of our families struggling to access and maintain stable housing. More than 554,000 households are cost burdened, which means that they're paying over 30% of their income just to cover their housing costs. And so they're often strained financially, and that can impact their ability to fully access healthcare or education or transportation. And so unfortunately, we see this dynamic play out time and time again across every county in the state. We've seen, it's in the news, housing costs have been consistently rising in the area and the state, and that reduces the availability, of course, of affordable housing options. For example, I think it's really important when we look at renter incomes rose just 1% between 2000 and 2019, but yet the average rental rates rose 14% in the same time period. So people are sliding backwards and being pushed financially. Additionally, these housing gaps disproportionately impact Black, Indigenous, Latinx, Asian, and people of color, which can trap renters in a cycle of unsafe, unstable, and unaffordable housing. So we ask the members of this committee to please pass House File 3143 to support renters that are most vulnerable to housing instability, which is why expanding the eligible use of housing infrastructure bonds for households at or below 50% of the area median income that need access to affordable housing but not supportive services is so important. We know stable housing is, again, the foundation that enables a thriving workforce, a thriving economy, and most importantly, thriving families. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Members, are there questions for the testifiers or the bill author? I see no hands going up. Just looking once more. Representative Agbaje, final comments on, oh, there's a hand up.
Sorry, Madam Chair. Took me a minute to raise my hand. I don't have a question, but I just want to comment on this. Thank you, Rep. Agbaje, for this bill. I am familiar with the work that PPL and other organizations are doing on the ground. Housing was a problem before the pandemic, and the pandemic happened, and it highlights the importance of housing even more. So I'm very grateful for this bill, and I'm grateful all the great organizations and the people that testified today. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Agbaje, final comments on the bill?
I think we continue to talk about the great need that we have for housing in the state, and this will just allow us one additional flexible tool to get there. So I ask for members' support on this bill. Thank you.
And do you want to renew your motion? This one we have to vote on.
Yes, sorry. Hold on, let me find where I am. Thank you, Madam Chair. I renew my motion that House File 3143 be re-referred to the General Register.
Ms. Hirsch, please take the roll.
Chair Houseman?
Aye.
Vice Chair Howard?
Aye.
Representative Tice?
Aye.
Representative Agbaje?
Aye.
Representative Bliss?
Aye.
Representative Gomez?
Aye.
Representative Hassan?
Aye.
Representative Heinrich?
Heinrich, aye.
Representative Hurd?
Aye.
Representative Juergens?
Juergens, aye.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Barr?
Aye.
And Representative Breyer?
Aye.
And Madam Chair, we have 13 ayes and no nays.
There being 13 ayes and zero nays, the motion prevails, and House File 3143 is passed. And then, members, I'm going back on my agenda here. The next bill on the agenda is House File 3287, and this bill is going to be laid over. Representative Agbaje, please proceed with your presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and everyone again. So this bill is House File 3287. We were supposed to hear it a little bit earlier, but due to scheduling, we're hearing it now. So this bill is meant to create a grant program to support housing court mediators around the state. The testifiers you'll hear from later are a part of a coalition of organizations that provide certified mediation services to help people resolve conflicts when it comes to housing. So mediation and landlord-tenant disputes is important because it leads us to the broader goal of keeping people in their homes. We know that most landlords and tenants work really well together and have good relationships, but yet even in those best relationships, sometimes things happen, and having a neutral third party work through conflict around issues like non-payment, repairs, disputes between neighbors, and more, helps to create a beneficial solution that puts the parties back on track and preserves the relationship. Another benefit of mediation is that it's a useful tool in preventing evictions, and because we know that evictions are disruptive and traumatic events for people and families. They upend people's lives and unfortunately can lead to job loss, missing out on an education, and be a detriment to physical and mental health. By engaging in mediation, landlords and tenants can avoid costly court fees and the long-term effects of an eviction appearing on a tenant's record. The use of mediation is voluntary, but this bill would allow that option to be more accessible to more people. The bill allocates $425,000 in grant funding to certified mediation services. In addition to providing the support to tenants and landlords, the bill aims to ensure access to culturally specific resolution programs, which is useful for seniors, people of color, and people with disabilities. The bill also aims, as I said earlier, to reduce the need for court actions and costs during housing conflicts. So with that, I'll turn it to my testifiers who will discuss more about the benefits and need for more housing mediation.
Thank you. Our first testifier is Beth Bailey, Executive Director, Community Mediation. Is it Seven Restorative Services Incorporated? I'm not sure I have that title correct. Please, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. It's And Restorative Services, not Seven Restorative
Services.
Sorry about any typo. And thank you very much for the opportunity to talk to you about Housing Stability Mediation Services. My name is Beth Bailey, and I began mediating in Minnesota 28 years ago, piloting mediation services in Hennepin County's housing court. Since then, Community Mediation Minnesota providers have mediated over 30,000 disputes between renters and rental providers. This morning, I'd like to lift up some of the collective wisdom of the voices shared around our mediation tables. Each story is unique, yet patterns emerge. Madam Hausman and committee members, there's a tremendous amount of pain on all sides across the state, and I appreciate that you recognize that pain is marked with racial disparities and existed prior to and will continue after the pandemic. I will speak to two specific patterns that the proposed legislation addresses: the need for communication that creates space for both dignity and solutions, and the need to streamline and humanize access to resources. First, too often a conversation that never happened or went poorly precipitates the loss of housing and rental income. For decades, I've heard landlords indicate they filed an eviction to start a conversation, and renters share they withheld rent because their concerns with property managers or resource providers have gone unheard. There is so much common ground in the space between renters and rental providers and resource providers, but we need good communication to find solutions. As a mediator, I can tell you we human beings need to be seen, to be heard, before we can make that mental shift to work together to create a durable agreement. And there's a cruel irony to conflict. During conflict, our need to communicate increases, but our capacity to communicate decreases. More than ever, mediation needs to be a part of our toolbox in Minnesota. Secondly, renters in the midst of a housing crisis face a very siloed and bureaucratic system of resources, and navigating these silos takes longer than the state's eviction timeline. This timing mismatch between the state statutes and local resources needs to be addressed for both renters and rental providers. When we fund mediation case development, which is what this bill would do, we help people navigate the silos and prepare for their mediation session. For example, as a mediation case manager, if the dispute is about non-payment of rent, I'm going to offer to connect the parties to the financial resources prior to the mediation so that they can come to that mediation with a pending application. This legislation builds on Community Mediation Minnesota's statewide infrastructure and proven practices, including remote mediation services that are working in regional centers in Greater Minnesota and the Twin Cities. In fact, with temporary COVID funding, last year, we mediators collectively provided over 1,000 remote mediations with participants from 77 different counties. Thank you, Representative Agbaje, for bringing this bill to the committee. And committee, thank you for your consideration of this bill that would establish a housing mediation grant program within Minnesota Housing Finance Agency.
Thank you. We're joined now by Sharon Sun, mediator from the Conflict Resolution Center. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Hello, I'm Sharon Sun, the mediator, program director for Conflict Resolution Center. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members, for allowing me this time to speak. I am a former property owner, 26 years. I had property in Dakota County, Hennepin County, and Cook County. And as a property owner and a small business owner, it was very difficult to handle challenging situations. And I, as I look back, it would have been wonderful to be able to call a third party, a mediator, to come and have a conversation with the renter and myself to talk about expectations, to talk about challenges, to set up a plan that if, you know, that has consequences, and make sure that our expectations were the same and understood. I had to evict people, and that was costly. It was challenging. And then to recoup the money that I had lost, then I had to go to court again and travel to that county to manage that. And for small property owners, the fees of an attorney are just exorbitant, and it's this whole system is challenging. And as a state, I believe we want to continue to have these small property owners to have some place to call to say without having to use the court system, this is what this HF3287 would provide across the state. So it also allows us, like I said, to be able to deal with situations sooner. I had a situation where neighbors were calling and complaining, and I wasn't sure whether it was race related, because it seemed like there was some undertones of that. But instead of taking the neighbor's side to be able to have a third party come in so we can have a conversation and attempt to come up with some solutions would have been very helpful at the time. After I did become a mediator, I did use mediation services with a renter, and we were able to have a conversation when we were stuck and able to move forward with her where she was, I did not have to evict her. She didn't get that on her record, and she was able to go ahead and find housing. And I was able to get the needs of my organization met. So with that in mind, I just ask that you would pass HF3287 and give it your support. And I want to thank you for allowing me this time to talk with you.
Thank you. And finally, we have Dana Amundson, Housing Program Coordinator, Mediation and Restorative Services. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Dana, and I am the Housing Program Coordinator at Mediation and Restorative Services in Blaine, and we primarily serve residents in Anoka County. I'm testifying today in support of House File 3287 because I firmly believe that housing mediation services have an important part to play in keeping families stably housed. In my daily work as a housing program coordinator and as a mediator, I often hear stories of individuals and families who are seeking out services well after they have received an eviction notice. As you are all probably aware, the eviction process can move very quickly, and if folks aren't already well connected to services, they might not know where to turn. In fact, just a few weeks ago, I received a phone call from a man who had been evicted, and he needed to vacate his multi-generational family within 24 hours. We spent about half an hour on the phone together as we searched for emergency resources in his area. While we weren't able to mediate this particular case, it clearly emphasizes the need for preventative housing mediation services. Mediation could have benefited both the property owner and renter by coming to an agreement on potential rental payment plans, lease violations, or even a move-out plan. By using mediation, the property owner could have saved the time and cost of going to court, and the renter and his family could have possibly had a little bit longer to find another place to live. Housing mediation services truly try to work upstream where there are more options for resources available and prevent situations like this from occurring. With this bill in place, community mediation centers would have more resources to reach both property owners and renters across Minnesota and share with them the benefits of mediation. I thank you all for your time and support of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, are there questions for the testifiers or the bill author? Representative Heiss.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Abadji, for bringing this forward. I just think this is a step in a great direction of us doing better at keeping people in homes. And I can't tell you how excited I am to be on this legislation and to see it go forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Others? I see no more. Thank you, Representative Agbeje, checking once more. House File 3287 is laid over.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah, thank you. And now, the next bill on the agenda is Representative Howard's House File 2861, and the chair moves that this House File 2861 be laid over. Representative Howard. Oh, you have an author's, I believe. Would you like to move the A1 amendment before you proceed and just speak briefly to the A1?
Yes, Madam Chair. I would like to move the A1 author's amendment, which gets the bill in the shape we'd like to move it forward in.
Okay. Anything more about the Representative Howard moves the A1? Members, any discussion? Seeing none, if you would unmute. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Howard, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll be brief because my testifiers will do a better job talking about the importance of this bill than myself. But House File 2861 is a bill that helps address our housing crisis in an area that's often overlooked or under-discussed, and that's ensuring that we have affordable housing options for our people with disabilities. Affordable housing for people with disabilities to live independently is one of the hardest types of housing to find. And this bill would allow the use of housing infrastructure bonds to help create individualized living opportunities for people with disabilities in a portion of a senior housing unit. Federal standards currently allow for a senior housing project to serve up to 20% of people under the age of 55, and this bill would align state law with that federal standard. And so it's a small bill with a small change, but for a handful of projects like this, like the one being envisioned by our testifiers will talk about, it can make a huge difference and create a housing option that simply doesn't exist right now. And so with that, I would turn it over to my testifiers.
Thank you. We're joined first by Chris Stedling, Senior Director of Real Estate Development, Able Light Cornerstone Village. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. I'm Chris Detling with Able Light Cornerstone Village. Able Light is a nonprofit organization that provides housing and education services for education services and other services for folks with intellectual and developmental disabilities in 13 states. In Minnesota, there's over 150,000 people between the ages of 18 and 64 with cognitive disabilities, and there's just an extreme shortage of affordable, safe, and supportive housing options for them. Many individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities, or IDD, live with their parents or unnecessarily in group homes, but what they really want is a home of their own, where they can increase their independence and live their best lives. Able Light created Cornerstone Village, which is a housing community, which are multi-generational, intentional communities where people with disabilities and without disabilities can support each other to live independently. We opened our first independent market rate senior housing development in Victoria, Minnesota last year, and we're starting construction on developments in Oakdale, Minnesota, in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and Sacramento, California later this year. We hope to also develop a Cornerstone Village in Brooklyn Park that will be 100% affordable to households earning less than 50% of the area median income. As Representative Howard mentioned, this bill is meant to align the HIV program with federal fair housing policy, the Housing for Older Persons Act, which allows senior housing communities to set aside up to 20% of the units to serve people under 55. And this is how we're able to serve young adults with IDD at our Cornerstone Village senior housing communities across the country. I'm joined by Patty Arsdale and her twin sons, Ryan and Jeremy. Ryan and Jeremy rent from us in Victoria, in a Victoria community, and they just want to share how living at Cornerstone Village helps them increase their independence and live their best lives. Patty, Ryan, and Jeremy, you're up.
All right, we'll first recognize Ryan Donarsdale, Minnesota resident from Cornerstone Village. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Please identify yourself for the record.
I am Ryan Donarsdale here, and this is my brother,
Jeremy Donarsdale here as well.
Yeah.
Say, way too, it's a pleasure and way too good experience for you to do this.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to identify myself. Sorry.
We also are joined by Patty Van Arsdale, also a Minnesota person.
Okay. Yeah. I'm Patty Van Arsdale. I'm their mother. And so I was just going to maybe just ask them, kind of guide them through some of the different questions. Yeah. Just asking them why they enjoy living at Cornerstone and just having them both kind of just answer. Yeah.
So reason I like living at Cornerstone, I like living here, I like helping people. I like also helping with the seniors, see if they need help, see if they anything they need, I can help them out. Because I also made some muffins for them one time, and they thought it was pretty good.
But then when you did the muffins, so I'm going to insert as we go through this just to kind of make it clear. So when you were doing muffins, did you have all the ingredients?
I did not have all my ingredients. All I was missing was 4 eggs, but they helped me with that piece. So I still gave them some muffins out of that. So
they kind of got to know each other in those ways.
Yep.
How else, and maybe Jeremy, how else do you guys help with the other seniors?
By helping way too with the trash collecting, with some of the sidewalks, it can be dangerous with the ice and snow and all. And we offered our services to help way too collect their trash and bring it to the trash for them.
And some of the villas that they're outside, so they go out and they do some of the trash. And how about like when they get some of their boxes from Amazon or a little bit bigger?
Yeah. We help them out with the boxes. We help bring them out to their apartments. If it's a little bigger than they can handle, me and my brother help them out with that. So.
And how about with activities that you guys do? How about the other young adults with disabilities and the seniors together?
Yeah, we do kind of like to put some ideas that we're on this a new app thing called GroupMe. It's where we to connect with the other young adults or seniors that we help them plan for new activities, like we do doing like movies or games like bingo, or activities to keep our bodies moving and healthy, over at the Chaska Recreation Center.
So, and how about, does that help you? What does that help you get to know them, Rye?
Yep, that helps me out. Helping get to know them, what they all like, what they all do, and it makes me feel good about what I learned from them. So, yeah.
Not to mention all their stories that they say.
True.
All their stories.
Yeah.
But a lot of old people have way too wisdom to share.
Wisdom, yep.
True.
They have wisdom, yeah. As we all do.
Yeah.
So. I think part of what, and I just like to insert a little bit, and then I'll let them talk just a little bit more, is that the fact that the young adults and the seniors, they can come together and they each have different strengths, and it helps them as they get to know each other in these different activities, that they then can feel safe coming and going because they've now gotten to know each other a little bit, and I feel safe as a mother knowing some of the people that are around the boys. And if they need something, I'll know that they're taken care of a little bit, and I'll know who's around at the time. So I think it's a safety, and plus they're successful and they feel successful here, mm-hmm. living independently, that they've been able to do that. And how about living together with each other, with you two?
Yeah. I thought it was doing pretty good. It's almost been about a year now, which is pretty nice.
Yeah, we moved here in June 2021. And we've really helped with he and I. We two have been really doing good with living each other. I thought it wouldn't be so good at first, but we two after a couple, once it's been going really well.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything further?
I think that's it. We recommend it.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for being with us. Mr. Dudley, do you have anything more that you needed to add?
You know, I don't need to add it. I feel compelled to say to Ryan and Jeremy, you're just such a wonderful part of our Cornerstone Village community in Victoria. Life wouldn't be the same without you living there. And, you know, we really appreciate having you as a resident. So glad you decided to rent an apartment from us. And thanks for taking the time today. And I'll see you soon.
Thanks. Members, are there questions for the testifiers or the bill author? Give just a few minutes for anyone if you need to find the unmute button. I don't see any questions from members. Representative Howard, final comments on the bill.
Madam Chair and members, I too want to thank especially Ryan and Jeremy for coming and sharing with us about your experience at Ablelight. It's stories like that that help kind of paint a picture of what the legislation that we're considering could offer. And with this small change, we can create some housing that simply does not exist or is not being built in this state. And so it's a policy change that makes sense, and it fits in sort of the yes and mode that we need to be when it comes to addressing our affordable housing crisis. And so I would encourage member support.
Thank you, Representative Howard. This bill is laid over. House Bill 2861 is laid over. Members, just thinking about the bills we've had over the last few meetings, as we expand uses for, and eligibility for housing infrastructure bonds, we have to redouble our efforts to get a larger amount for housing infrastructure bonds. Otherwise, it becomes something of a false promise if we have more eligible uses but not a higher dollar amount. So we need to really work at making that argument to our leadership as they think about what we're able to set aside for this. So I see no other hands, no other comments. Members, our next meeting will be on Thursday, March 10. There being no other business before the committee, we are adjourned.